friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is Dan Friedel filling in for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. I'm glad to be back here in the big chair and allow Sonny some well-deserved time off. After all, he labored on Monday, which was Labor Day here in the United States. I'll be here for the next few days, and I'm happy to be back to work here at VOA after celebrating my 44th birthday over the weekend. It was a weekend of athletic endeavors for me as I moved into my, okay, I'll say it, my mid-40s. A couple of activities gave me some appreciation for the athletes we follow here on the Sunny Side of Sports. For example, a day before my birthday, I challenged myself to run 10 kilometers without stopping, and I did indeed complete the challenge. I left my apartment in the Capitol Hill neighborhood of Washington, D.C., and ran past the famous Capitol Dome, along Pennsylvania Avenue, which is the famed avenue of the White House, and turned onto the National Mall, past the famous museums of the Smithsonian Institution. I ran along Madison Drive, named after James Madison, the fourth president of the United States, past the new Museum of African American History and Culture, and around the Washington Monument, which is just reopening to visitors after a long period of repairs. I came back along Jefferson Drive, named after the third United States president, and past the Smithsonian Castle and National Air and Space Museum. I ran past the U.S. Botanic Garden and back onto the grounds of the Capitol. I could see the VOA building over my shoulder as I went up the hill. It was a good workout, and it gave me quite the respect for some of the champion runners in the world who cover the same 10 kilometers on the track. I just looked up Mo Farah's best time over that distance. And guess what? He runs a 10K over twice as fast as I do. I did it in about an hour. And in 2010, he ran the London 10K in 27 minutes, 44 seconds. Perhaps my new goal should be to cut my 10K down to twice as slow as Mo. So 55 minutes, here I come. On Saturday, I rode my bike 67 miles, that's over 100 kilometers, along a former railroad that's been turned into a bike path in Northern Virginia. My friends and I did over 100 kilometers in about 5 hours, which means we averaged about 20 kilometers per hour. Here's a look at a recent Tour de France stage. It was just about double the distance, that's 200 kilometers. Stage 8 came July 13th and ended in Saint-Étienne, France. Thomas de Gendt, a 33-year-old Belgian, won the stage all by himself, 6 seconds ahead of Thibaut Pinot of France. And get this, he did the stage in exactly 5 hours. So that's twice the distance I did in the same amount of time. So what does that prove? Well, even though I'm in the best shape of my life at 44, I'm only half as good as a professional athlete? Well, perhaps, I guess it does. But hey, some people don't even try, do they? I'm happy to be starting my 45th year with the benchmark. Maybe next year I can do the same distances just a little bit faster. But I must say, 5 hours riding a bike gave me a good deal of appreciation for those riders in the Grand Tours each year who spend 5 or 6 hours in the saddle every day for 3 weeks. I tip my cap to them for sure. Well, I'm exhausted just thinking about the weekend. I need a little more sleep this week. Speaking of running and exhausting athletic endeavors, Sonny left me this little birthday gift this morning when I came in. It's a conversation about the second annual Four Rangers Ultra, which is scheduled from September 18th to September 22nd in Kenya, a location organizers call the spiritual home of distance running. The grueling five-day event will cover more than 230 kilometers and take the endurance athletes past elephants, lions, buffalo, zebra, giraffes, and other wildlife. The energetic Andy Edwards caught up with a runner who completed in the inaugural race last year. In this on-course Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again to their conversation. Here's Andy.
I'm sitting in a North London cafe, in fact, it's my regular haunt for breakfast, with someone whom, and he laughs when I say it, I think of him as Ultra Pete. His full name is Pete Ryan, who's a British sports trainer. That's what he does for a living, his day job, locally in North London. But he has a very interesting career so far as an ultra runner, does all sorts of races which I might find crazy as a what I call more regular runner. But in particular interest for us, in the summer, he did the inaugural Nairobi Ultra Marathon. Quite an event, 5 days, and well, that's one of the things we're going to be talking to Pete about. So, Pete, why did you go to Kenya to run? Okay, it's the first one, ultra running, but you say it's over 230 kilometers, 5 days. Kilometers. What motivated you to do that? Because most people would think, what on earth are you doing?
I suppose I'm obsessed with pushing myself to the limit in whatever it is I do. So the wonderful thing about ultra runs is you will eventually reach a point in which you really have to dig deep to go further on. Now, you can't get a better environment than through some of the conservancies in Kenya. The wildlife you come across, the conservation that you're raising money for, the anti-poaching, it's just a beautiful, beautiful run, and I couldn't say no to the challenge.
I know from talking to you that wildlife, conservation, you've done ultra races all over the world. That's a very important factor for you. So what was special about the Kenya Ultra?
So I've done runs before in Peru through the Amazon, through the Namibian desert as well. And the company that organises all of these runs, they reached out to me and said, look, Pete, we're thinking of doing a run here in Kenya to raise money for this. How would you fancy it? And again, as I say, that to me is just like ticking every box, animals, beautiful terrain, and raising money for that fan. I couldn't say no to that. So that was the inspiration there.
And what animals in particular were you raising money for, or was it just Kenyan wildlife in general?
So the race itself is done by a company called Beyond the Ultimate, and it's in partnership with Save the Rhino. So the main thing is Rhino Conservancy out there, but at the same time it's raising money for the rangers themselves to buy clothes, food, and things like that. Rather than just the anti-poaching, it's actually focusing on the rangers who give up their lives for that.
Interesting you talk about rangers, because I remember interviewing a Kenyan elite runner, and he'd done well in a marathon I was covering several years ago. I think it was maybe Prague Marathon, and it turned out he had a day job, and he said, I'm a wildlife ranger and trained by British Army, as it happened, and he was combining being, you know, a top class runner running something like 2:10 for the marathon, but he was doing his full service as a ranger, including night sentry duty and everything, and going out into what I would call the bush and making sure the poachers weren't active.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what was happening here. So as we were running along, the route was constantly being manned by the rangers themselves. So in the daytime, half were looking after the runners, and then of a nighttime, the half that were looking after us would then go about their duties of the night. You know, it was amazing to see. You could see it happening all as you were going on.
Where did the race, Nairobi Ultra, start? And was it a loop course? You say 5 days, 230K. Just give us a picture of what you took in as the route.
We started off in one of the conservancies. I'm just trying to find the name of it now. We start in the Lua Wildlife Conservancy, and we finish on the equator line in the Old Pajeta Conservancy. And through that, we ran through five different conservancies as well. So we saw different sorts of terrain, animals. We saw everything. It was incredible.
Oh, that's interesting. So five different conservancies, and you're seeing different animals. So just give us a little kind of word picture of what animals you saw. I mean, everybody thinks, well, Africa, there's a lot of them about.
So on day one, you were running along. As soon as we started off running, we were round by a zebra, running around everywhere. There was one of the days that I actually ran through a herd of zebra, giraffe everywhere, rhinos, elephants. There were lions in the distance as well, to which we were told to keep well back from. Hyenas, everything you can think of and more. It was just everything was there. And you got so close to these animals that you just couldn't experience in any other way. A safari, you're in a car, you're in a safe thing. Here, you are exposed to it all, and that was the exciting part of the adventure.
Were there any dangerous moments? You talk about lions, tigers, etc.
There could have been, but it was so well organized and so well manned by the rangers. They knew where all the animals were. A few slipped through every now and then, but we had helicopters and planes flying overhead to keep a track on where everything was. But the potential is there, but it was so well handled.
You've done other ultras, and in talking beforehand, you said you've been an ultra runner, actually, only for 3 years, and you're 32, obviously a fit guy because you're a sports trainer, that's your work. Where else have you raced, and was there always a connection with wildlife conservation in your choice of venue?
So the first run that I trained for was for another ultra, but that was in Peru, and that was in the Amazon jungle there. Now, again, you're talking animals, you've got animals everywhere around you. So that was the big highlight for me. I've always been an animal boy. I'm obsessed with animals. My arms are covered in tattoos of animals. So that's a real trigger point for me. So that was the real biting point for me. It was the potential of seeing going to the Amazon and everything there. And that's always been the selling point for me.
What about your other ultra, your fellow ultra runners? How big or small was the field? Because that's it's not something. It's not like doing a 10K road race. You know, 232 kilometres, 5 days. I presume you've got to have really special preparation just to get through it.
To be honest, it's more. Don't get me wrong. There comes the physical element of being able to do it, but I believe everyone can do it. I think the ultra running actually comes down to more of a mental game, because it's really is just a point of every single step forward is going to get you closer to the end. And that's the thing that I love about this, is that there's people there of all different shapes and sizes and heights and weights, that it eventually must come down to one point, which is the mental capacity to carry yourself through. Because as I say, everyone reaches a point on these runs where you do break down, where your fitness level isn't there, your body can't keep up, but yet you still carry on. That's the addictive part of this. So all the people that I know that do these runs, we all have something in common, and it's that ability to push ourselves mentally and just carry on and carry on and carry on.
That's really fascinating. Well, Pete Ryan, Ultra Pete, as I may call you, we look forward to hearing, I presume, this may not be the last time you do an ultra in Africa. You got plans for more?
I would easily go back to Kenya and do the same run again, but I've got plans now to do two more ultras, one more in the Arctic Circle, and then another one in Japan. So another 2 5-dayers.
Well, I think I need to lie down for that. Pete Ryan, thank you very much for talking to us. Fascinating insight into the Nairobi Ultra Marathon, the first one, and there's more to come. Thanks, Pete.
Thank you very much.
That's Andy Edwards and Pete Ryan in London. And I'm Dan Friedel, filling in for Sonny Young in Washington. And you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. We'll be back with more of Tuesday's show after this programming message.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 22:30 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
They're playing back.
With all this talk of grueling athletic endeavors, I'm glad I chose to catch up on some sleep Monday night. But wow, perhaps I should have stayed up or gotten up early to watch the USA in the men's FIBA Basketball World Cup in China. The tournament produced a thriller on Tuesday. It was a preliminary round matchup of what are likely to be two of the best teams in the tournament. The United States faced Turkey in one of Tuesday's eight games in Shanghai. The U.S. prevailed barely, 93-92 in overtime, as Ersan Ilyasova's three-pointer at the buzzer did not go in. The teams were tied at 81 at the end of regulation. Halfway through the extra period, Turkey jumped out to a five-point lead before Kemba Walker of the Boston Celtics scored five straight points to tie it up at 89. Chedi Osman of the Cleveland Cavaliers produced three straight points of his own to give Turkey back the lead. But eventually, with the game on the line, Milwaukee's Chris Middleton made a pair of free throws to lock up the game for the Americans. Walker finished with 14 points, 6 rebounds, and 7 assists, while Ilyasova led all scorers with 23 points, adding in 14 rebounds. After the game, Turkey's Furkan Korkmaz was asked what he and his teammates learned from the close loss to the Americans.
Because we know we have great potential. We have a lot of young players also. We have really good experienced players. Whenever we step up on the court, we just want to go out there and then beat who, doesn't matter like who we're playing against. Today, of course, USA team, when you say USA team, they have a lot of players who can change the game, you know. Today also, game was in our hands, so I think we need to be really confident and I'm proud of this game.
Turkey plays the Czech Republic next on September 5th, and the USA faces Japan. In other action on Tuesday, Australia defeated Senegal. New Zealand beat Montenegro. The Dominican Republic defeated Germany by 2 points. The Czechs defeated Japan. Lithuania beat Canada. Brazil beat Greece by 1 point. And France blew out Jordan. On Wednesday, four African teams are in action as Angola plays the Philippines. Ivory Coast takes on Poland. Nigeria plays South Korea. And Tunisia faces Puerto Rico. With Tuesday's results in, here are the teams leading their groups with 2 wins apiece. In Group A, it's Poland. In Group B, it's Argentina. Spain leads Group C. And going down the rest of the list, it's Serbia, the United States, Brazil, France, and Lithuania. Monday was Labor Day here in the U.S., a day when most workers took the day off. But in the New York City borough of Queens, the world's top tennis players were hard at work. My VOA colleague Gwen Uten is here with this recap from a busy day on the hard court. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Dan. For both the men and now the women, the door is wide open for a new U.S. Open singles champion to be crowned. Like her male counterpart Novak Djokovic, Naomi Osaka's U.S. Open title defense has come to an end. She suffered a straight set defeat on Monday against Switzerland's Belinda Bencic. And as a result, Osaka will lose her number one ranking, and Australia's Ash Barty will once again claim the top spot. After her match, Osaka said the defeat has taught her a valuable lesson.
For me, it's something that I've learned over the summer, that even if you aren't playing your best, you're going to play people who play their best. So you have to figure out how to win those matches. And it's matches like that that are the most important because it really tests your character.
Osaka says she will keep building on her momentum at Flushing Meadows with the goal of reaching greater heights next season.
Of course, I can look at this, be very disappointed and mad, but I feel like I'm not mad at it. Of course, I would like to reach higher, like, rounds, and that's definitely what I'll aim for in Australia.
In the meantime, 13th seed Belinda Bencic has advanced to the quarterfinals for a second time and her first since 2014. Her victory was her third win against Osaka this year. And after the match, the 22-year-old said her entry into the quarters this year is very different from 5 years ago.
Before the match, I didn't think it was different. After the match, it definitely felt different. So I just came with the same mentality like I played her before and just really focused on the game and not about the hype or the occasion, the stadium and the round. After a match, it feels definitely different. It feels like this was the most important one.
Bencic is set to play her quarterfinal match against Croatian Dana Vekic on Wednesday. Also on the women's side, Americans Taylor Townsend and Christy Ahn both lost their round of 16 matches on Monday. Townsend lost in three sets against Canadian Bianca Andreescu in the wee hours of the night. Andreescu will next face Belgian Elise Mertens, who claimed a straight-set victory over Christy Ahn. In Tuesday quarterfinal action, Ukrainian Elena Svitolina will face Australian Johanna Konta, and China's Wang Chang will face Serena Williams, who is vying for a record-tying 24th Grand Slam title. In women's doubles, Americans Katie McNally and Coco Gauff were eliminated in straight sets. Team Mikoko fell to 2018 doubles champions Victoria Azarenka and Ash Barty. The two will continue on the road to defend their title in the quarterfinals on Tuesday. On the men's side, it was a match that looked a bit like David and Goliath. 6'6" German Alexander Zverev was ousted by Argentine Diego Schwartzman, who stands just 5'7" tall. Schwartzman is now into the quarterfinals, where he is set to face Rafael Nadal, who has entered the U.S. Open quarters for a ninth time. Nadal's opponent, Croatian Marin Cilic, proved to be his toughest challenger yet at this year's tournament. After losing the first set, Cilic fought back to claim the second, but then the tides turned in Nadal's favor. The Spaniard reached match point with a winning forehand pass that went just outside the net and then sealed the deal with a match-winning four-handed pass. Afterwards, Nadal thanked the crowd that was gathered inside Arthur Ashe Stadium.
So special to see this amazing crowd supporting, a great connection with the crowd here in New York. They are very energetic, very passionate, and I consider myself like this, especially on court.
And among the spectators was none other than American golfer Tiger Woods, a close friend who Nadal acknowledged for his support.
It means a lot to me to have him supporting. As I said, he's an amazing inspiration. All the things that he accomplished on the sport and the way that he managed to keep fighting that hard. Watching him on court always have been an example. On the golf course, have been an example and a real inspiration for me. You know?
Nadal leads 7-0 in victories against Diego Schwartzman, but Nadal said he considers his upcoming opponent one of the most talented on the tour.
Everything, every single thing of his game, because he's one of the most talented players on our tour. He has everything, amazing control, amazing speed. He has the ability to read very well your shots and to understand very well the game. And it's not a surprise that he's there.
Nadal and Schwartzman will face off in the quarterfinals on Wednesday. That day, we'll also see Italian Matteo Berrettini in his first Grand Slam quarters. On Tuesday, Switzerland's Stan Wawrinka will face Russian Daniil Medvedev. And following that match, Bulgarian Grigor Dimitrov will face Roger Federer, who is on a mission to claim his sixth U.S. Open title. Keep it here for the results of the quarterfinals at the U.S. Open tournament. And that's all from me, Dan. Back over to you.
Thank you, Gwen. I'm Dan Friedel, filling in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Couple quick notes on that FIBA World Cup game. Young Boston Celtics star Jason Tatum left with an ankle injury. He'll be evaluated before the next game. And it was the 44th consecutive win internationally for the USA. That wraps up the September 3rd edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to VOA producer Bill Werkinger and engineer Bill Andrade. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young, and that's The Sunny Side of Sports.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, education has the power to transform the lives of people worldwide, especially in Africa. But often, educational practices are outdated. Rethinking education on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
This is Science in a Minute.
A recent study led by Columbia University's Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory provides evidence that a huge freshwater aquifer lies beneath the Atlantic Ocean just off the northeast coast of the United States. The study, published in the journal Nature Scientific Reports, suggests that the mostly freshwater supply is being held in porous sediments that lie below the ocean. The study authors say that the aquifer appears to be the largest found in the world so far, and that it extends about 80 kilometers from shore in Massachusetts down to at least New Jersey. The study suggests that the fresh water was fed to the aquifer from melting glacial ice about 15 to 20,000 years ago. The researchers noted that if the aquifer were found on the surface, it would create a lake covering some 39,000 square kilometers. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Dante, AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
VOA's Learning English is available online at learningenglish.voanews.com. Check out our programs such as Let's Learn English, English in a Minute, Everyday Grammar, and many more. VOA's Learning English, your reliable source for learning English.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.